You're with Len Vidopek on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
To the Len Vidopek show here on TNT Radio live as we have breaking news. I'm back from the United States, which was a very exciting and enjoyable trip, but we waken in the United Kingdom to the news of multiple stabbing in Sydney, and we'll be returning to that in just a minute. At the same time, we see a potential escalation of the conflict in the Middle East, with Iran potentially contemplating an attack on Israel and the United States telling them not to do it. These are dark times. What we will try and do here on TNT is give you the facts and our opinions objectively and calmly, so that you can make your conclusions about what's going on in the world. Shortly, we're going to be speaking to Shane Healey. We've just been talking with him already on TNT about both of those matters, actually. Shane is very well qualified to discuss that. Later on, we'll also be talking to David Shaler, who is an MI5 expert. It's timely that he has been booked in before we realized, of course, that these incidents would occur. We'll get his unique insight into that as well. And later on, our very own Basil Valentine will be joining me to try to make sense of what may seem like quite an unstable world right now. I'm grateful for you joining me, and hopefully in the hours ahead, we'll find some calm, perhaps some solace, and I hope some optimism as well, even in these difficult times. Coming up in just a minute, we're going to be speaking to Shane Healey, and I'll set the scene on that in just a moment. If you want to share your views as well, go to tntradio.live. You'll be able to join in the chat there. You'll also find the phone numbers on that website if you want to come in. We will be talking with our colleagues and our contributors today about two very serious but different matters: the Middle East and also the stabbings in Sydney. Has the world gone mad, or is it just individuals who have apparently checked out from any semblance of civility? That's maybe something that we can debate and work out. More than anything, I want you to have the space to have your say on these as well. So go to tntradio.life and have your say there. All of that with me, Len Vidopek, right here on TNT.
Connecting the dots, painting the bigger picture.
They always have great conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Let's start with the stabbings in Sydney. We will find out more about that in a minute. But the big picture here is that there were multiple stabbings in a shopping mall in Sydney, deaths and also some seriously injured, including a nine-month-old baby. Why did this happen? Do we really know? We understand that the assailant was killed, was shot dead at the scene. The mall is still shut. And understandably, there's a police inquiry going on. But joining me now is Shane Healey. He's a terrorism and youth justice expert, and he's a former Australian Defence Force Special Operations Command Intelligence Operator. He's well qualified to talk about this and other matters. Shane, thank you for staying with us on TNT.
That's all right.
Let's go straight to the incident in Sydney. I know you've been covering it, but can you recap for us what you know of this multiple stabbing and any additional information? I understand the police have made a statement.
Yeah, so the police made a statement about half an hour ago. So at about 3:20 this afternoon, one male entered the Westfield Bondi Shopping Centre. He was carrying a 30-centimetre hunting knife, or a knife that appeared to be a hunting knife. And then he just started, and there's a lot of footage online, especially on Twitter, to show this, but he just started stabbing random people. He was wearing an Australian football jumper. He was attacking people of every ethnicity. So initially everyone was jumping on social media saying that this was terrorism, or because where Westfield Bondi is, there is a large Jewish community there, but there is also a large Muslim community that shop inside Westfield Bondi. A lot of the young men that tried stopping the attacker were young Muslim men, and there's a few videos of them online now being interviewed. So it was generally at this stage, it seems to be someone with some mental health issues that has just decided to conduct a random attack.
We do have a clip, I think, which if I can get our gallery to play. Can we play the clip now, please?
I'm going to bring in some new vision that we're just seeing now. This is, we're told, the man with the knife running. You can see people running away from him. I'm seeing this as you all are at the moment as well. Our producers have just had a quick look at it now. In his right arm, you can see the knife that's been referred to. That person scrambling away from him on the right of screen there. Other people still not sure what's going on, then working out what's going on. Clearly, we don't have audio, but he would appear to be shouting at people. That man in the cap there, trying to talk back to him, perhaps to try to calm him, but then there seems to be no stopping him at all. So it's the person on the right of screen right there, in the shorts, the footy top of some kind, running around that counter there, people just then triggering what is going on. That young family to the left there as well. So many people on a busy Saturday at that Westfield shopping centre. So that is vision that we are seeing for the first time there now of the man with the knife that we understand has been shot by police. A young female officer, there's been a report, was able to pull her weapon and take that person down. Annie Puller, as I said to our audience then, we were just, our viewers, that we were just looking at that fresh vision there that we're seeing of the man believed to be involved in this, and you've been speaking to more people that witnessed all of this.
Yeah, Michael, it's really chilling video, and many people have actually captured that armed man inside. They say it was terror that lasted for nearly half an hour as he made his way through this centre, also entering several stores that people were hiding in storerooms of.
Shane, that clip doesn't really tell us about motive, though quite clearly he was unstoppable. I don't want to trial by media here. But do we have any indication from the police about motive? You suggested that someone was saying it was a terrorist attack, but it could equally well be simply one lone operator.
Let's get that word right out of there. This is not a terrorist attack. Okay, so, and he was stoppable. He was shot by a police officer. Mm-hmm. This is a big part of the issue, and I'm sorry if I'm but like, we've got to put things into context. This was a lone person entered a multinational, multi-ethnic shopping mall. Didn't was very random. There's plenty of footage. I've posted some. If you go to my Twitter feed, TNT Radio is all tagged in it. It actually had some video of the police officer taking the man down. So, you know, this is, we're in a very heightened state globally because of what's going on in the Middle East, because of what's going on in Ukraine and Russia. I completely accept that. But if we, some of the comments online are just fear-mongering and making more people more anxious, more nervous, more insightful. And I don't think that's what we need in times like this.
Okay, so for the avoidance of doubt, and I'm grateful for your clarification, you don't have to apologise at all. You are sure that there isn't a terrorist element to this. This was just a lone wolf, somebody who maybe had mental health issues, but was not operating on any terrorist basis.
Well, I've been involved in over 40 domestic terrorist incidents, and I spent 15 years throughout the Middle East conducting terrorism operations. And this has no of those, no hallmarks of any terrorist operation that I've been part of.
Okay, it's cold comfort, of course, to the victims, but it is perhaps helpful to understand that from your experience, we shouldn't be dressing this up as a terrorist event or trying to link it with other events going on in the world at the moment. In terms of the way that he was taken down, I understand that it was a female police officer who shot him. That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, that's 100% correct. Yes, she entered by herself with a couple of other civilians that followed her up. Again, there's footage of this. And she identified the attacker, identified the knife, called for him to put the knife down. And when he didn't, she shot him several times and put him down. And then, again, this is why law enforcement are law enforcement. He didn't die immediately. And then she went to provide him first aid and then until he passed away. Because, you know, sometimes you actually want them to live because you want to understand the motive. And because now we have a deceased attacker, it's going to take a number of days, if not weeks, for that exploitation of, you know, who was this person? Where did he live? What was going on? Why was he in that shopping centre? You know, these are all answers that will come out in the number of following days and weeks, and we'll have a lot more information. And I think it's at that time we have that information that we can comment on why it took place and then take procedures and precautions so it doesn't happen again.
Thank you for that. If you can stay with us just a bit longer, after the break, I'd like to ask for your perspective on the other big news today, which is the heightened tensions in the Middle East potential involvement of Iran. So if you can stay with us a little bit longer, I know these aren't the happiest things to discuss, but we do have to discuss them. Banking what you've said so far, in your judgment, this wasn't a terrorist attack. It was a lone person. It'll take weeks to figure out what went on. Obviously, I have to figure out what his backstory was. The assailant is dead, as are at least five people who are involved in the attack. Stay with me. We're talking with Shane Healy, and after the break, I want to get his perspective on what's going on in the Middle East as well. All of that with me, Len Potopic, here on TNT. See you in a moment.
TNT's Patrick Henningsen.
Joe Biden's a bit of an anomaly in that respect. Normally, the incumbent is running a lot stronger going into the second term or the re-election bid. That's not the case with Joe Biden. We see a lot of people fleeing from his support base, even from his own party, which is unusual, and there's a lot of good reason for that on the foreign policy side, which we'll be discussing throughout this program, but also domestically as well. They haven't been able to tackle inflation in the United States, and that's a big problem. So this isn't, voters aren't, they're not caring anymore about COVID. They don't care anymore about vaccine mandates. As we've said before, this mainly is going to be, it's going to come down to being three things: gas, groceries, and World War III.
Patrick Henningsen on today's News Talk, TNT.
The Lights is Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
Our beautiful world is changing, withering, dying by the hands of those who don't value nature, even though we all depend on it for life itself. But there is hope. Together with caring friends, the Nature Conservancy can restore our lands, heal our waters, and save our wildlife with big solutions only nature can provide. But every day we lose more of the places we love, and we urgently need to save endangered lands, waters, and wild species. The actions we take today will determine the tomorrow we leave to our children and grandchildren. The water they drink, the air they breathe, the beauty they experience. To learn more about how you can help protect and conserve our beautiful world, visit nature.org today.
I'm Naheem Hines, professional football player and proud supporter of the Muscular Dystrophy Association. My mom was diagnosed with muscular dystrophy when I was 14, and I watched her struggle. But MDA helped her get the best treatments and care, and they also help kids like my buddy Ethan.
My name is Ethan, and I'm 12 years old. Thanks to the Muscular Dystrophy Association and people like you, I have more hope than ever before. From day one, they've treated me like family at my local care center. MDA is the only one that funds over 150 care centers across the U.S. to help provide state-of-the-art care for adults and kids like me.
For over 70 years, MDA has been transforming the lives of people living with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and other related neuromuscular diseases. They fund the research for breakthrough treatments, care, and cures. And MDA provides support to thousands of families like mine and Ethan's in communities like yours. Thanks to MDA, kids and adults can live life to its fullest. Join us and learn more at MDA.org today.
People might tell you that Lyme doesn't kill people, but we are losing people. People disappear from their lives.
One of the scariest things that I had to deal with was memory loss. Not just like I don't remember what I did last week, but like I forgot all the words to my own songs. I remember going to my primary care physician, and he was like, "You are 100% healthy. There's nothing wrong with you." And my response was, that's impossible, I'm dying.
I wasn't working, so I had all of these hospital bills. We had to move out of our home and move into my parents' basement.
I just wish I could have truly been present in those big moments, you know, when she took her first steps or, you know, her first day of preschool. Lyme is such a thief and it goes undetected because no one is looking for it.
For more information and prevention tips, go to projectlyme.org.
So many people who had no history of heart illnesses have got it now, or blood clotting after the COVID-19 vaccination. Punish those who hurt people with COVID madness, lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Welcome back to the Lembotopic Show on what is a dark day for Sydney, a dark day potentially for the world. We've been speaking with Shane Healy, who is a terrorist expert, about the stabbings in Sydney in a shopping mall. He says this is nothing to do with terrorism. He's been involved in 40 terrorist incidents in the past, and this does not bear the hallmarks of a terrorist event. It's a lone person who's now dead, been shot by the police, and it'll take a while to understand motives, if indeed we can ever understand the motives of somebody who's willing to stab a 9-month-old child. Shane Statt, thanks for staying with us. I want to ask you briefly about the other big story today. Iran has been advised by America not to attack Israel following Israel killing a number of very senior military people recently in an assault on Syria. What can you tell us about your take on what's going on in this tense situation?
So I think this is far more dangerous in some ways. I think one of the things that gets missed is that the Israelis attacked the Quds commanders in a Iranian embassy, and there's a international law based, it says that a country's embassy is that country's sovereign land. So what would Australia do if another country attacked Australian citizens inside an Australian embassy? So I think we've got to kind of put that in a little bit of context, whether we agree or disagree that the Quds Force are good or bad. I was in Iraq for a number of years and had a lot of operations against Quds Force Shia militia groups, so I'm no fan of the Quds Force. I'll put that out there. But at the same time, there is a few international sanctities. Julian Assange spent months and months and months in a embassy under that protection, and the English didn't go in. Even though the English wanted to, they didn't. So I think there's a few international norms we need to look at. As far as the retaliation, I tweeted out, and my information out of Iran is that they're going to use drones rather than a airstrike. The Israelis have the Iron Dome rocket system, which is excellent at preventing rocket attacks. They detect the point of origin. So as soon as they're fired, their radar system identifies the rockets or the planes or the missiles and then strikes them so they can't hit Israel. The United States Military Space Force monitors the globe for these kind of incidents as well. So in the past months when the IRGC or the Shima, their boxing Shia militia group forces, have fired missiles or drones at US military bases in Iraq and in Jordan, the US Space Command has identified that at the point of launch or the point of origin, and they've provided enough warning that the US service personnel have been able to get out. So the US has a very, very good understanding and intelligence capability of identifying when this is taking place. And currently they've got a very close look at what's going on in these Iranian air bases that they're currently looking at preparing for those attacks. When the US says that the Iranians shouldn't strike, Israel, I guess I can see why that, because a big part of the Israel's motivation was to draw America into the conflict. And the Americans at a strategic level are going to do everything in their power to not have to put boots on the ground in Gaza, in the Middle East. They've tried, especially President Obama and now President Biden, have tried very, very hard to please Iran through sanctions or punish them through sanctions so they don't have their nuclear program. So I think that's where we're at the moment.
It seems to me, I've done a lot of dealings with Iranians. I know many Iranians in the United Kingdom. And one of them has said to me this morning, why shouldn't Iran be allowed to defend itself? Pretty much in terms of the example you've given with Australia. What can Iran do which would be proportionate and, in your view, tolerable without escalating this out of all control?
And I think that is the excellent question, which is why they haven't retaliated already, because the Ayatollah's got to see to be powerful in his country and defend, you know. But if you look back when, under the Trump administration, they killed Soleimani, who was the head of the Quds force in Baghdad, the Iranians fired a number of missiles at US bases within Iraq, and that was kind of the proportionate response. But it wasn't the embassy. I think that's what's got to be really taken into account, because by the attack on the embassy, they did attack Iran. So if it was these IRGC officers were in a convoy or in a training ground or in Syria as part of that occupation and they were targeted men, I think we would have seen a reaction already. But because it was essentially a state-on-state action, I think that's why the Iranians are still kind of going, what is proportionate to make the people of Iran satisfied? And don't forget, the Quds Force command structure are the most powerful element within Iran itself. And also, you know, they have a lot of power within the Iraq government, in the Yemeni government, in Lebanon, in Syria. So it's not just Iran. There is a number of other countries that are staunchly allied, and that's through the IRGC. So, and that's what the Americans are very aware of, which is why they've given that warning to the Iranians. But at the same time, the whole world knows that there's going to have to be some sort of retaliation from Iran.
This does create a very difficult situation for everybody. Iran is the regional superpower. Many would say that it was Iran who undermined the ISIL organization. If you were advising Iran, what would you say?
Yeah, so and I was in Baghdad in 2014, 2015 with that, you know, retaking of Mosul and the crushing of the caliphate, and saw the Shia militia groups and the rise of those Iranian power. And I've really thought about this over the last couple of days. If I was, you know, given that 30 minutes to brief the Ayatollah, it would be look for Israeli targets outside of Israel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not easy, though.
No, it's not. But if and this is what's given the justification for Netanyahu's total war in Gaza, is because Hamas attacked Israel and killed Israelis in Israel. And I spent a number of weeks in working with Israeli intelligence, you know, in the 2000s. And to the Israelis, they view this, and I spoke to Chris Smith about this last week. When I was doing that training and operations with them, one of the Israeli instructors turned around and said, Shane, you've got to understand, we're a country of 8 million people, and there's 400 million Arabs out there that want to push us into the sea. So they view this as a fight for their very existence. And that's why Israel always come back twice as hard. You know, if you kick us, we're going to punch you twice. Because to them, this is always about they want to push us into the sea. So that's why Israel, people say overreact, but when you put it in that context, that's why they always strike hard. But in this case, you know, if the Iranians attack Israeli targets inside of Israel, the Israelis will go after Iran proper.
Thank you, Shane. It's not news that I want to hear. It's not reassuring, but we're not here to sugar the pill. That's Shane Healy, who is a terrorist expert, covering two stories there. One about the stabbings, multiple stabbings in Sydney, which is not a terrorist act, as far as Shane's concerned. And the other one is the possible response of Iran to the attack on their embassy in Syria. Joining me next is David Chaler, who is a former MI5 operative who has been censored for revelations he's made about MI5. David, thanks for joining us on what is really a rather dark day at the moment. It's appropriate that you are here. Perhaps we should carry on the discussion we've just been having. You worked in this in the UK, essentially the Secret Service. What do you make of the Iranian situation where a number of senior generals were killed on what amounts to Iranian soil, which is the Iranian embassy in Syria? What should we expect from Iran?
Well, I would counsel the Iranians not to attack, to play this long and let Israel and the US worry, because clearly, if they are responding, it's an act of self-defense against Israeli aggression, although Israel hasn't confirmed the attack, all the evidence points to it being Israel. But I'd also counsel the Iranians to look at the evidence surrounding 9/11. I've recently produced a research paper on this that could be found on bookofthelaw.org. Under judgments, and it clearly shows that the FBI did not investigate 9/11 in any way. They named 19 terrorists after two or three days, even though New York was in chaos. And even then, they only had dates of birth for six of those men. Now, I'm a former counter-terrorist officer. I know that is not a standard of identification that is usual in the world of security and intelligence. They blamed Al-Qaeda on day two, again, without any evidence. They claimed that Flight 77 had gone in for the Pentagon, for example, within hours of the attacks taking place. But the FBI did not secure crime scenes. It did not forensicate those scenes. There were no air crash investigations for the four aircraft that are supposed to have gone down. Now, I urge people to look at this primary source evidence for themselves, because it clearly shows that Muslims were not responsible for 9/11. There is another trail of evidence that points to Israel being responsible. And again, I'm quoting police reports here. The FBI have a report that there were traces of explosive residues on a blanket that belonged to the five Israelis who were arrested that day in New York, who've become known as the Dancing Israelis. They had targeting maps. The company they worked for, Urban Moving Systems, was something the FBI assessed to be a front company for Mossad. We also know that shortly before the 9/11 attacks, in around June 2001, 125 Israelis, all of whom had extensive intelligence backgrounds and things like military intelligence, communication specialisms, were quietly deported from the US. Now, I would suggest, with Israel's record for false flag terrorism, that these 125 Israelis were responsible for creating what are known as patsies. This is why we've got so much intelligence indicating that Muslims were involved, but absolutely no evidence whatsoever. So my advice to Iran and to the other countries of the world is to take this up with the UN Security Council, because it means that Israel murdered 67 Brits on the day of 9/11. And when you look at that modus operandi and apply it to 7/7, it's very, very similar. Tony Blair blamed Muslims on day one, and yet the Mossad were giving Benjamin Netanyahu a warning on the morning of 7/7 before the attacks had even happened. Now, prior knowledge, again, is taken by intelligence services to be complicity in those attacks. And I'd urge people, again, to look at the photographic evidence, which doesn't add up. It's mostly obviously forged and manipulated on the day of 7/7. So we must again conclude that Israel, not Muslims, were responsible for 7/7 as well. So our government should now be taking actions to sanction Israel for its role in these attacks, so that compensation can be paid to people who've been a victim of what went on. And indeed, NATO itself invoked Article 5 on the basis of absolutely no evidence against the Muslims and against Al-Qaeda, and therefore against Afghanistan. given the clear evidence shows that Israel was responsible for 9/11 and elements of the US military, by the way, as well, because they used advanced weaponry. You've only got to look at the collapse of the towers yourself to see that they used most likely what are called directed energy weapons as well as thermite. That's not part of the official story. And that the objects going into the buildings, according to the US's own radar data, two different radar stations, independently corroborated by independent investigators, show that the objects going into the towers were travelling far too fast at those altitudes to actually be civilian passenger jetliners. It's far more likely they were missiles or they were an A3 Sky Warrior drone, which is a US military plane, way beyond the capabilities of any terrorist or insurgent group. Obviously, I've been involved in trying to get this evidence out there for nearly 20 years now, and I rely upon my experience as a counter-terrorist officer. I've also got to say the trail of evidence around the Israeli embassy bombing in 1994 in London leads back again to Mossad, not the two Palestinians that Mossad framed for the attacks.
That's pretty strong stuff, David. I want to come back to you in a moment after the break about questions of motive and also a look at what is likely to happen, not what should happen, but is likely to happen in the Middle East. You're listening to Lembotopic here on the Lembotopic Show. I'm talking to David Shaler, a former MI5 operative who has a distinctive take on various terrorist events around the world. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to talk about motive and also maybe some predictions about what could happen in the Middle East. All of that with me, Lembotopic, on TNT. I'll see you in a minute.
While serving in Afghanistan, I was hit by sniper fire. The fighting was so intense, the medevac chopper was barely able to land. In the hospital, I was given a 5% chance to live. It's a good thing math wasn't my best subject. Today, I visit classrooms and share my story. I talk to kids about dealing with life's struggles. I tell them, with a little help and a lot of work, that you can overcome any challenge.
DAV helps veterans like Adam get the benefits they've earned. They help more than 1 million veterans every year in life-changing ways.
I know that some struggles are big and some are small, but they're all struggles, and you have to learn to get through them. With support from DAV, more veterans like me can live their best life. And as a new father, I have one more reason to keep on keeping on. My victory is being there for the next generation.
Adam Alexander, may your victories inspire many more. Support more victories for veterans. Go to DAV.org.
What do I love about riding? It's the thrill, the excitement. Riding gives me a sense of freedom. I feel so connected to the road. Riding is like therapy to me. It makes me feel alive. Love riding? Back off.
You're with Lembotopic on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Lembotopic Show here on today's News Talk TNT. We're discussing heady things today. Multiple stabbing in Sydney, which we are assured by Shane Healy, who is a terrorism expert, that it wasn't a terrorist attack. It was just a lone murderer, basically, who himself has been shot dead by the police. And then we've been discussing the more strategic question of what Iran should and might do in response to the killing of many of its senior officials in the Iranian embassy in Syria. Lots of messages coming in. Let's go through some of these now. Alex says, tech utopia, first Star Trek doesn't exist. There's many other, sorry. That one actually goes into some other information. Where is Anne Mallon is a question these days. Shayla's ex-girlfriend, I don't know what that's about. Dearie me, tell me he doesn't believe that 911 was anything other than a self-inflicted wound, says Holly. They were there to film the event. There's a lot of discussion about this now. Let me put it my way. Lots of you think that the 911 incident is really something which was self-inflicted by America. David Shaler suggests that it's the Israelis themselves who were involved in it. I'm not qualified to comment. I simply report on that. We might get David Shaler back if we can in a short while. We've got just a technical question about that at the moment. Let me describe to you the scene as I understand it. Iran has been attacked by Israel on its embassy. Israel hasn't denied that. The embassy in Syria was pretty much destroyed. Many deaths there. Joe Biden has said to Israel that they stand behind Israel and what's going on there, but has also said that Israel should not be attacked by Iran. It's a very difficult situation because it's an international dispute. Iran is a regional superpower, and as a regional superpower, it may want to defend itself. That's a question which Iran has to answer, but the world watches on. What could happen here is that Iran takes a proportionate approach. David Shaler hopefully will be able to give us a perspective on that in a minute. Shane Healy says that if he was advising Iran, he said, take the long view. Don't attack Israeli soil. Find targets which are Israeli targets, but not in Israel. All of this makes me feel rather concerned. I'm concerned because having worked with the Iranians, I understand that they have national interest. They have the right to defend themselves. But what that defense looks like could affect the world. If Iran is drawn into a larger dispute, then Russia may have something to say about it too. We've been seeing proxy wars all over the world between America and Russia, and this could be no exception. The question I have for you is, what do you think should happen? What do you think Israel should do? Is there a prospect of Israel being brought under control by America? Does it need to be brought under control? My main concern is that if we have, fundamentally, if we have a situation where Israel is attacked by Iran, then what will America advise Israel to do? We've already been told in the show today that America doesn't really want to go into a Middle East conflict, and that's a very major consideration. It's a very major consideration in terms of what could happen next. But we watch on. Much as I'd like to have the power to make something work, be an international intermediary, I don't have that authority. So like everybody else, we're waiting to see what happens next. I think we have David on the line now. David, can you hear me?
Hi, Len, but yeah, I'm back. My connection went down there. Obviously, the conspiracy theorists would find that enormously suspicious.
Yeah, I could see that your connection went down there. Let's go back to what you were saying about 9/11. You think that Israel was behind it. What would be Israel's motive?
Israel and elements of the US military. Obviously, it's always been in Israel's interest to create animosity towards the Middle East, Arab countries, Muslims, and so on. They've never wanted a peace process, really, because any peace process would require them to withdraw from the occupied territories. The West Bank is still occupied. East Jerusalem is still occupied. This is a massive violation of international law. An earlier UN Security Council resolution dating from the 1940s actually still called for them to pay compensation to those Palestinians affected by the Nasbara, when they were effectively 750,000 Palestinians were ethnic cleansed. People talk about the existence of the State of Israel, but since its inception, it has had scant respect for the rights of man, scant respect for international law. The occupations, as I say, of the West Bank and East Jerusalem have gone on since 1967, and the world's done very little about it. In the late 1990s, there was enormous pressure on Israel to start these withdrawals. And that's partly why I think Israel carried out 9/11, to then turn the Western world against Muslims and to ensure Israel's security.
I'm not really qualified to respond. I have to say that your view isn't what we would say is the orthodoxy.
Not everybody is an ex-intelligence officer like I am. I worked upon the Lockerbie issue, which people will recall that in December 1988, a plane was blown out of the skies by the Libyan intelligence services. I worked on that issue, so I've got some background in aviation terrorism. I know in that case there was an air crash investigation. I actually went to see the reconstructed plane in a hangar where it was obviously forensicated, so they could conclude how the plane had been blown out of the skies, and this was a bomb put in the luggage hold. Now, again, in that case of Lockerbie, there were plenty of conspiracy theories suggesting that people like Syria or Iran were responsible. But I found out from my own experience with MI5 that MI6 was putting out the misinformation, particularly to newspapers like the Sunday Telegraph, but to the rest of the British media. And again, if you know your intelligence stuff, you will know that in the newsrooms of the UK, there are intelligence plants who are there to get stories that the intelligence services want in the newspapers. In fact, there's a section called MI6 called Information Operations, whose job it is to do just that. And this is generally made up information that MI6 says works in the interests of Britain, but actually in fact works in the interests of MI6, which is very different. And people may recall that I originally blew the whistle on MI6 funding Islamic terrorists with connections to Al-Qaeda in Libya to try and assassinate Colonel Gaddafi in 1996, and that operation went wrong, murdering innocent civilians in Libya. That was the reason I left the services. I didn't want to be part of terrorism. I thought I was there to stop people, like, for example, in the IRA, which I did very successfully. But I did not want to be party to a terrorist action in which innocent people had been killed. So although people don't know a lot about this, I again asked them to judge the primary source evidence. The 9/11 Commission did not do that. It does not look at the witness reports of explosions that day on 9/11, for example. It doesn't check any of the information about the speed the planes are going at according to the US's own radar data. It accepts that the object that went into the Pentagon went in at 530 miles per hour, but at that altitude, that's just physically impossible for a Boeing passenger jet airliner. And when you actually do enhance the picture of the object going into the Pentagon that day, there's very few pictures being released, but it shows the object is leaving a corkscrew trail. Now, anybody who knows their ballistics will know a missile leaves a corkscrew trail at that level, not a civilian jet airliner.
Let's talk about Iran then. What should Iran do?
Well, I say Iran can play this long because the world is turning against Israel at last. Again, there's been a UN report issued by the UN rapporteur, issued in March, saying that this very reasonably meets the standards of a genocide because there's been no concern for the way those attacks have been carried out in densely populated civilian areas. We've seen women and children murdered. But what we've also seen, of course, is an attack upon infrastructure. Anybody who's seen the pictures of northern Gaza will see that it has been absolutely destroyed. And again, that is part of the genocide. Is removing people's homes obviously makes it much more difficult for them to survive, so that will contribute to deaths. But also a cultural attack as well. There have been attacks on schools, universities, cultural centres. This is an attempt to actually wipe out the existence of a people. And you'd think the Israelis would learn from this, because this is what Adolf Hitler tried to do to the Jewish people in Germany in the 1930s.
Yes, well, Iran has been turned into the bogeyman, but actually it's tried very hard to become a friend of the West, in my opinion. And now, of course, it's been put under enormous pressure.
Israel does not want Iran to become a friend of the West. This is the problem. It's created all sorts of problems by being a state there, but by also, carrying out these occupations, having scant regard for human rights or truth. If what I was saying earlier on, if five Iranians had been arrested in possession of material with explosive traces on the day of 9/11, I don't think we'd be having this debate. Everybody would know about that. Similarly, if 125 Iranians with military and intelligence backgrounds had been arrested in the run-up to the 9/11 attacks in the US, everyone would know about it. So this whole genocide by Israel has shown very, very clearly how the influence of Zionism is pervasive in the Western world. I've been talking about this for over two decades now, and I'm obviously clear that Zionists are not Jews. Jewish people believe in the covenant. They love God and love your neighbor as you love yourself, in the same way that people of the Christian faith do. Zionism is an abhorrent political idea. When you look at your history again, you'll realize that it was Zionist bankers who funded the Nazis and funded the communists in Russia. These are people who have no respect for human rights whatsoever. And when you put this in the context of the recent pandemic, you'll see that, again, according to the government's own data, the Office for National Statistics, there were no excess deaths outside lockdown. The pandemic itself was faked, and it's part of this wider Zionist agenda to essentially depopulate the Western world.
What you're saying is an internally coherent story. If you're right, though, it makes assessments by America rather wrong. And the UK tends to go along with America. Go on.
Yeah. I would also say, of course, that having worked and provided assessments about the threat from Libya in the 1990s, I realized that MI5 was making assessments on the basis of very, very little reliable intelligence. In fact, I prepared a paper about the Libyan threat to the UK and its people, and the first line of that paper said, MI5 does not have enough reliable intelligence to come to an informed assessment about the threat that Libyans pose to the UK and its interests. That's what people have to understand. And I think we're also in a situation where we realize that there seems to be somebody, again, if you talk about this sort of Zionist elite, who are feeding false intelligence into the intelligence service, into separate intelligence services, who are then thinking that is collateral for the intelligence they have because they have it in different intelligence services. But it's not the case. It really is not. And to say it, we are at a point where we really have to be looking at this very, very closely and preparing charges against people who waged war upon the people of Afghanistan, upon the people of Iraq, waged war in Libya in 2011 and murdered Colonel Gaddafi. And you notice the common link here is that people, Iraq and Libya, were both trying to change their sales of oil into gold-backed currencies, or the euro or the Libyan dinar, which of course would have been an enormous attack on the dollar. The only reason the dollar has value is because you have to have dollars to buy oil, and therefore people need to have dollars. Once that's gone, the Americans came off the gold standard in 1971, so the dollar is not backed by anything other than the fact that the American government says you've got to use it internally in the US and for oil sales. So we've got to look at these things as actually bankers' wars. And this is why now it is absolutely imperative this comes out, because these people are being exposed left, right, and center, and their only response is to try and create World War III. I warned against this in an article 10 years ago, saying condemn Zionism or be complicit in World War III. And that's why Israel is attacking Iran, it's attacking targets in Syria, it is trying to escalate what is going on currently in Gaza into the Third World War, so the bankers can use that to cover up the economic crisis we're in at the moment. And don't forget, Thames Water just recently defaulted upon a debt repayment. That is a sign, of course, that things are going wrong. And Bitcoin, of course, is going to record highs, which is an indication that investors want to get out of what's called fiat money, like the pound and the dollar and the euro, and get into Bitcoin, which is a thing that people want to use.
There's so much to unpack in this, and we won't be able to do it in 2 minutes. Just in terms of your prediction, then, what do you think Iran will do? Not what it should do. What do you think it will do?
It's always hard to tell with Iran because of the mentality of the religious clerics. It's very difficult to get into their shoes, as it were, and try to think like them. I say, if they've got any sense, they'll play this long and not retaliate. But in the past, we've seen Iran retaliate in these circumstances. So it's very, very hard to call. But again, my message to Iran is, please don't be used as a pawn in starting the Third World War. If you've got any sense, you will not retaliate against Israel and allow the UN to now take action against Israel for its role in 9/11 and 7/7, but also for for the genocide currently going on against the Palestinian people.
Thank you so much, David. As always, your unique take leads to more questions than answers, but we'll come back to that in a future occasion. That was David Shaler. I wonder what you think. Do put your comments in the chat. Coming up next, we're going to continue talking about the international situation, maybe a little bit about the Sydney situation, though I think we've covered that quite well. It sounds like it was a murder rather than a terrorist attack. But what's going on in the Middle East should concern us all. So coming up next, we've got some of my colleagues, we've got Pelle, we've also got Basil coming on to talk about that situation. You're watching the Lembotropic Show here on today's News Talk. See you after the break.